It's Monday, March 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, a U.S. president is in Cuba for the first time in nearly a century. Islamic State is blamed for the latest blast in Turkey.
I don't think that political decisions make a big difference for the refugees that will come anyway.
A deal is made to deal with the flow of European migrants. Also ahead, Mariah Carey has a big year coming. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President Barack Obama arrived in Cuba Sunday on an historic trip as Washington and Havana move toward normalizing relations 55 years after they broke off ties. The first sitting U.S. president to travel to Cuba in almost 90 years, Mr. Obama will speak to the Cuban people in a televised address and lay out his vision for the future of relationship between the two countries. Not everyone is optimistic, and concerns linger about human rights in Cuba. VOA's Victoria Maki has been in Havana for a few days in advance of the president's arrival and joins us with perspectives she has heard from residents there.
So we talked to Cubans from all different backgrounds, all sorts of political persuasions. There were a lot of varieties in what people had to say about the current visit of President Obama. There's definitely a degree of excitement in the days leading up to it. Some of the dissidents especially that we spoke with had a lot of apprehension and are pretty much opposed to President Obama being here because it means that validates even further the Castro-led government, which they oppose.
For Cubans, how is the president's visit impacting them? Are they expecting this to be the beginning of a new era?
It depends so much on who you talk to, and I don't think we've gotten a really firm grasp on it. Even, in dozens of interviews, people on the street, people in their homes, some people really just equate the U.S. government with the embargo, and so they're really looking forward to seeing what happens. If this rapprochement means that the embargo is going to end, which they kind of see directly tied to the economic situation here, they feel like Obama has the power to do that. There's so much variety in what people expect. Some people don't feel like anything's really going to change. We've heard from many, many people who say the only changes that happen when you've got a dignitary of this level visiting, you've got the Pope, you've got President Obama. The only thing that really changes is the streets that those dignitaries ride down get, repaved and repainted, and the homes along the way get kind of fixed up, but everything else kind of stays the same. And for a lot of Cubans, that status quo is pretty grim, crumbling houses, poor sanitary facilities. It's hard for a lot of people here.
Is this the first time you've been there?
It is, yeah. My family's from Argentina, but this is my first time in Cuba.
And your impressions coming into, obviously Havana is the capital. Have you been able to travel around the city extensively?
We have. We've been to lovely, well-kept neighborhoods where there are a lot of tourists, and you can tell a huge, huge difference, like a lot of cities in Latin America, between the very tourist-friendly neighborhoods and much more marginalized populations. We've been to both. We've been to places where trucks and cars and bicycles and cows share the same unpaved dirt road. We've been to swanky hotels. I mean, you have it all here in Havana.
President Obama has arrived in Cuba today, even taking a walking tour through a part of old Havana. What have the preparations been like in advance of the president's visit?
A lot of security. You see, not only is there a very heavy uniformed police presence around town, but you've got a very heavy undercover police presence. I would say that's the biggest thing that we've noticed.
For years, international broadcasting, the Voice of America and Radio Martí, and TV Martí, for that matter, have tried extensively to reach the Cuban people. Do you get a sense that that message has gotten through? Have people told you they've been listening?
I'll tell you that VOAnews.com and MartíNoticias.com, those websites are blocked here. Give you an indication of how things still are. We've had some people talk to us about how they used to rig up a system so they could listen to radio broadcasts from VOA and from Martí on their shortwave radios down here. It seems like there's a lot more options for news for them now. There is internet available in certain locations. It's pretty costly. Cubans know what it's like on the outside. They've heard, they hear from family, you know, they've got relatives in the U.S., and here they know that it's so limited. Most Cubans can't get internet access in their homes. It's illegal. That's really the biggest change. Just having even a little bit of connectivity like that has made a really big difference for them.
It's a fascinating glimpse into an island that is so close to the United States, yet has been so far for decades. We're very fortunate to speak with Victoria Maki, who has been there for some time now. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Turning to our social media segment, International Edition's G. Abby Lee is in the studio to bring us the latest. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim.
So, what's the buzz on the president's visit?
As soon as he landed in Cuba, President Obama tweeted, "What's up, Cuba? Just touched down here. Looking forward to meeting and hearing directly from the Cuban people." The White House retweeted that, and as of now, more than 20,000 people liked it.
That's a lot. Well, What's the local reaction like so far?
A lot of excitement. A reporter with The Telegraph, Harriet Alexander, is sharing thoughts and photos from Havana. She's on Twitter at @H_Alexander, and one of her tweets reads like this: "I have never heard Obama's name be mentioned in so many passing conversations as at the Havana airport today. Excitement palpable. #ObamaInCuba. That's a trending hashtag meaning Obama in Cuba in Spanish. Our own Victoria Maki, who we just heard from, is also tweeting from Cuba. Her handle is @VMMaki.
I see. So tell us about the reaction in the United States. What are the Republicans saying about it?
Critical things for sure. The GOP frontrunner in the race to the White House, Donald Trump, sent out this tweet: "While President Obama just landed in Cuba, a big deal, and Raul Castro wasn't even there to greet him. He greeted the Pope and others. No respect." Another GOP contender, Ted Cruz, tweeted the link to an opinion piece he wrote for Politico titled, "In Cuba, Obama will legitimize the corrupt and ignore the oppressed." So definitely not supporting his visit at all.
So what else is trending?
Today's the start of the spring, and that means equinox, when day and night are the same length. It also means the start of Persian New Year, Nowruz. Both #SpringEquinox and #Nowruz are trending on Facebook and Twitter. Back to you, Jim.
Well, thanks for the analysis, G. You may follow her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. I post several times daily as well at VOA Stevenson. And we always invite you to follow along the International Edition stream. That's at @VOA_IE. As President Obama visits Cuba, he has a delegation with him that includes U.S. lawmakers. My International Edition colleague Michael Lippin spoke with VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman to find out which members of Congress are in Cuba with the president and why.
There are about 24 lawmakers who are in Havana with President Obama. A handful actually traveled on Air Force One, but most of them went on a separate plane for dignitaries heading to Havana. Most are Democrats. Perhaps unsurprisingly, there is more support among Democratic lawmakers for the opening with Cuba than there are among Republicans.
Why is that?
In general, Republicans have more closely aligned themselves with the traditional position of the Cuban-American community, which was absolute opposition to anything in Cuba with Cuba that had anything to do with Cuba so long as Fidel or Raul Castro were in power. That has been evolving within the Cuban-American community, particularly among younger Cuban-Americans.
Because they support reestablishing ties, don't they? Some of them.
Far more so than their elders, than their fathers, their grandfathers. Absolutely. But yes, there is still a partisan divide, although I should note that there is, for instance, a Republican senator who traveled on Air Force One with Obama, Jeff Flake of Arizona. He is no pushover when it comes to conservative causes, but he very much believes that the U.S. embargo failed, that it's time for a new day, and that, in fact, a great catalyst for change in Cuba can be free enterprise. And he thinks that there's a great opportunity here for Americans and Cubans to rub shoulders, for new businesses to be started, and that this will be all for the good.
But even though the U.S. and Cuba have reestablished formal ties, that embargo remains in place. So how do you think this visit by Obama and all the people traveling with him will affect the debate in Congress about the embargo?
nothing that happens in Havana while President Obama is there will affect one iota the law that is on the books in the United States, which is the U.S. economic embargo of Cuba, which has been in place since 1960. However, around the margins, you are already seeing change. You are already seeing more Americans traveling to Cuba, and the U.S. government essentially turning a blind eye to what would otherwise be a crime. Most Americans up until now have not been able to go to Cuba without risking some sort of penalty. And even before then, Congress did pass a law that poked a great big hole in the embargo to allow U.S. agricultural exports to Cuba. In fact, among the Republicans who are very much supportive of President Obama's opening, but who can't really say so for political reasons, are conservative Republicans from the heartland that represent states with huge farming and agricultural interests. And when you talk to them, they will tell you privately that they think this is great.
VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Turkish authorities are blaming Islamic State for Saturday's suicide bomb attack in Istanbul, which killed four people, including Israeli, Iranian, and U.S. citizens. The Interior Minister says authorities identified the bomber and are searching for others believed to be involved in the attack. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Turkish Interior Minister Efkan Ala says authorities used DNA samples to identify the suicide bomber who carried out the attack.
Bu menfur intihar saldırısını gerçekleştiren teröristin kimliği tespit edilmiştir.
The identity of the terrorist who carried out this wretched suicide attack has been determined. This person, this terrorist, is Mehmet Öztürk, born in 1992 and registered from Gaziantep province. Current findings show the terrorist has links to the Daesh terror group. The breakthrough came, according to reports, when Öztürk's father came forward to police after recognizing his son from surveillance footage of the bomber. A local news agency says Öztürk was an IS suspect on what is called a terror-qualified missing persons list. An Istanbul prosecutor said five people have been detained in connection with the attack and other suspects are being sought. Israeli authorities are reported to be investigating whether the suicide bomber specifically targeted a group of Israeli tourists. Three of those killed belonged to an Israeli tour party. Other nationalities were also injured and killed when the bomber detonated his explosives on Istanbul's Istiklal Street, popular with locals and tourists. Dore Gold, a senior Israeli diplomat, is to hold talks Sunday with his Turkish counterparts in the aftermath of the attack. Several Israeli injured are being flown back home. In January, Islamic State was blamed by Turkish authorities for a suicide bombing that killed 12 German tourists in the heart of Istanbul's tourist quarter. Tourism is a key part of Turkey's economy, and observers warn this latest attack will add pressure to Turkish authorities to crack down on Islamic State militants who are believed to have a large and sophisticated network operating in Turkey. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
The deal struck between the European Union and Turkey to try to stem the flow of refugees comes into force. New arrivals in Greece will be returned to Turkey, with the EU then taking the same number of Syrian refugees from camps on Turkish territory. But as Henry Ridgewell reports from the Greek island of Lesbos, where most of the refugees arrive, there is growing anger at what seems as an immoral and unworkable deal.
A few kilometers off the coast, NATO warships and Turkish Coast Guard vessels patrol up and down the straits between Lesbos and Turkey. Helicopters watch from the skies. Europe and Ankara are trying to prevent a surge of refugees as the new deal comes into force. On the Lesbos shoreline, volunteers continue their round-the-clock vigil on the lookout for migrant boats. Samuel Radbert is from the Swiss Cross volunteer group.
I don't think that political decisions make a big difference for the refugees that will come anyway. They're still willing because they're on their trip for months or years, so they will try.
Like most aid workers here, Radbert is scathing of the agreement between Brussels and Ankara.
You can't charge people like you do with goods or money. They are not numbers, they are human beings. So you can't say we send one back and take another to Europe. That's not the way it goes.
Several days of poor weather have prevented many boats from making the crossing. But rescue teams here believe there are hundreds, if not thousands, of refugees waiting to set off. Turkish police say they arrested over 1,700 migrants Saturday along the coastline, along with 16 alleged smugglers. Greece is continuing to move refugees off the islands to the mainland. Somali refugee Abdi Yare Muse was waiting to take the ferry to the city of Kavala Saturday.
I know a lot of foreigners in Istanbul. We need to come, but it is not easy. It's very hard. Some people crying. Some people in the jail. Me, 6 days, arrested the police in Turkish. He took the photos and fingerprinting. I try to come again.
Rumors are circulating across the refugee camps of deportations to Turkey dependent on nationality. Despite assurances from Brussels of fair treatment for refugees, on the front line of the crisis, there are doubts the plan is either workable or legal. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Lesbos Island, Greece.
Sunday was special for Christians around the world. In the Holy Land, Palm Sunday observations, though, were overshadowed by a wave of unrest, as we hear from Robert Berger in Jerusalem.
Palm Sunday dawned in Jerusalem's old city to the sound of bells at the ancient Church of the Holy Sepulchre. The holiday marks Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem 2,000 years ago and the beginning of the Christian Easter Holy Week. Priests chanted the Palm Sunday liturgy, waving olive and palm branches as fragrant incense filled the church where tradition says Jesus was crucified and rose from the dead. But it is a sparse turnout of pilgrims this year in the wake of 6 months of Israeli-Palestinian violence. Palestinian shopkeeper Abu Hassan says Holy Week usually brings crowds of tourists to the old city bazaar, but not this year.
The situation this year, it's very bad. Not so many tourists coming and it's very quiet. And we hope the problem is finished and the people come to visit this Holy Land.
The pilgrims who made the journey were glad they did. Mark Caldwell, who came from the U.S. state of New Jersey, was fascinated by the mixture of Christians, Jews, and Muslims in the old city.
Well, it's been a lifelong dream of mine to be here, and it's an amazing nexus of three Abrahamic religions, so it's very important to me to be here, and it's an amazing historical and spiritual place.
Holy Week continues with two major events. On Good Friday, Christians will retrace the footsteps of Jesus to the 14 stations of the cross. And on Easter Sunday, they will celebrate the resurrection. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. A new 8-part documentary about Mariah Carey is leading up to a new tour and another marriage. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald tunes us into what's behind the upcoming series.
This is a fun item because everything about Mariah Carey is larger than life. And this promises to be the same thing. This week, she confirmed that a new reality show, or docuseries, as they're calling it, is on the way. It's going to be called Mariah's World. It will air on the E! Television network in 8 one-hour episodes. And it will follow Mariah as she prepares for her sweet, sweet fantasy tour and plans her wedding to her fiancé, who's Australian billionaire James Packer. Now, E! Sent out a press release early this week, and I have to read it because it's just so great. Mm. The series will present a unique, vulnerable, and surprisingly humorous side to Mariah that her fans have never before seen, while showcasing her unparalleled celebrity lifestyle filled with true glamour, maximum luxury, and ultimate stardom.
My goodness, where else can you go from there?
It's lifestyles of the rich and famous. Bubble baths and champagne. That is Mariah Carey. No release date has been announced for the show. Now, Mariah says the series will not include Packer because he's a busy guy. And it will not include her twins because she says that she doesn't want her kids to, be on camera.
Mm-hmm,
so
sure.
It'll be all about her. Now, Mariah recently changed her management, and this is seen as part of a larger current comeback. And Mariah is very active these days. She's currently touring the UK and Europe. This is her first European tour in a decade. She's going to do 4 South African appearances in late April, and then in June, she will have a residency at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas, extending from June 7th through September 11th. And, you know, Mariah Carey is one of those heritage artists mm-hmm. who doesn't necessarily need a hit single or even an album to tour. She goes out on tour and her fans flock to see her. And she's never been a huge touring artist to begin with. So there's been a lot of anticipation here.
The Las Vegas gig is reminiscent of what Billy Joel's been doing in New York at Madison Square Garden.
That's true. And Vegas is a destination of choice for so many of these long-running heritage artists. Celine Dion, Jennifer Lopez, Britney Spears sort of set the template with her fantastically successful Vegas run. You know, it's very convenient for them because they don't have to leave town. The people will come to them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as the wedding goes, this also is going to be spectacular. TMZ says Mariah's upcoming wedding to James Packer will be a private affair. Only 50 guests will be flown via helicopter to the Caribbean island of Barbuda.
No, it's not a Vegas wedding.
It's not a Vegas wedding. No. I mean, you know, they may film one for the TV show with an Elvis impersonator.
Or do the drive-through thing.
Or do the drive-through thing, yeah.
Anyway.
But as far as the real wedding goes, she's reportedly getting hitched sometime this summer, probably during her Caesar's Palace residency, during some downtime. Packer is reportedly building a $250 million resort with Robert De Niro.
Why so small?
There might be some useful cross-promotion here.
Yes, absolutely.
Like everything else in Mariah's world, it's big and it's glitzy.
Well, our heritage destination is right here. You join us every week and stop by for the Top 20 Countdown as well. Ray counts it down and he lets you know on Twitter.
At Ray on the Hits.
Ray, thanks so much for joining us.
You got it, Jim.
Been listening to International Edition. You can always find us at our website, that would be voanews.com, anytime you like to log on and stop by. We're also out there on Twitter. Follow us at VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Jonah Cummings. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington, and we thank you so much for spending part of your day with us. Come back again when you can. Have a super day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
All across Ukraine, people are standing up and sacrificing for universal values such as sovereignty, territorial integrity, human rights, dignity, clean and accountable government, and justice for all. The United States, said U.S. Assistant Secretary for European and Eurasian Affairs Victoria Nuland, has a profound national interest in Ukraine's success. Today, Ukraine's European future is put at risk as much by enemies within as by external forces such as Russia. Ukraine's oligarchs and kleptocrats who controlled Ukraine for decades know their business model will be broken if Maidan reformers succeed in 2016. They are fighting back with a vengeance, said Assistant Secretary Nuland, using all levers of the old system, their control of the media, state-owned enterprises, Rada deputies, the courts, and the political machinery, while holding old loyalties and threats over the heads of decision-makers to block change. It is critical for Ukraine's leaders to set aside their differences and put their people and country first. All those who call themselves reformers must rebuild consensus behind a leadership team and an International Monetary Fund and European Union-compliant program of aggressive measures to clean up corruption, restore justice, and liberalize the economy. The 2016 U.S. assistance program for Ukraine is designed to take on these challenges. Specifically, it is helping Ukraine clean up its energy sector by demonopolizing its gas market, supporting the appointment of a new prosecutor general who is committed to prosecuting corruption and asset recovery cases, and improving the business climate by streamlining the bureaucracy and moving ahead with privatization. In addition, Ukraine's judicial independence must be strengthened. Key services must be improved, including healthcare, education, and transportation. And finally, Ukraine's Ministry of Defense needs to be modernized. With strong, unified leadership in Kyiv, 2016 can and should be a turning point year for Ukraine's sovereignty and European future. As Ukraine's leaders recommit to drive the country forward, the United States will be there to support them. As Assistant Secretary Nuland said, "We must be no less rigorous than the Ukrainian people themselves in demanding Kyiv's leaders take their responsibility now to deliver a truly clean, strong, and just Ukraine while they still have the chance."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. We'll be right back.
for.